Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Some things should be uniform, and a woman's consent in Oswego should be a woman's consent in Buffalo, should be a woman's consent in Albany.
Governor Cuomo this month ordered the State University of New York to write an affirmative consent policy for sexual activity that would cover all 64 SUNY campuses. It'll be similar to an affirmative consent law that California recently passed. He directed the SUNY policy to include certain language like consent is clear, knowing, and voluntary. Consent is active, not passive. Silence in itself cannot be interpreted as consent. And consent to one form of sexual activity cannot automatically imply consent to any other form of sexual activity, unquote. The point, of course, is to reduce campus sexual assault, of which hundreds were reported to SUNY campuses in the last school year. Can this work? And what about critics who say it'll take the spontaneity out of sex and be unenforceable? Let's talk to Ann Friedman, columnist for New York Magazine's The Cut. She wrote a piece called Oh Yes Means Yes, The Joy of Affirmative Consent. Hi, Ann. Welcome back to WNYC.
Thanks for having me.
And listeners, call in with your stories, your opinions, your questions about affirmative consent. What's the difference in your experience between saying yes and not saying no? Can this approach reduce sexual assault? 212-433-WNYC. So, Anne, for decades already, it's been commonplace to use the phrase no means no when teaching young men about the notion of consent. How is affirmative consent different from no means no?
Well, you know, no means no was a message that young women got as well. I mean, that's something feminists champion too, to sort of say, stand up for your rights. And it just wasn't framing your right to also have a positive sexual experience as something you should articulate. You know, right now, I think a lot of women are socialized to think more about their partner's pleasure when they go into a sexual encounter, and reframing it in terms of the affirmative, whether that's verbal or nonverbal, I imagine we'll talk about that in a second, basically says to both women and men, you need to be actively caring about whether your partner is having a good time during your entire sexual interaction.
So you're saying this is not just about preventing sexual assault, this is about increasing women's pleasure?
I mean, I think it will probably have that effect. You know, on its face, this law is a change to the sexual assault policies, wherein when panels or disciplinary hearings evaluating whether assault took place, they have to ask the question of, did you have consent, rather than ask the question, did you try to refuse? So it really is about the sexual assault policy. But in order to make that work, they've got to sit down incoming freshmen and possibly, people, students of all ages, and sort of say, this is how you express to your partner that you're having a good time, and this is how you check in with your partner and make sure he or she is having a good time and wants to do everything that you're doing together. So I think that while it is about sexual assault, I anticipate that if Jerry Brown does sign this, it isn't fully law yet in California. Uh-huh. And if SUNY ends up enacting it, I think that, you know, it will have an effect on improving the sex lives of students.
So listeners, call us. Women, if you've ever been in a situation where you didn't explicitly consent but didn't explicitly refuse and it got bad or it got weird, 212-433-WNYC. Can this help? Men, your reactions to this, and parents of sons, parents of daughters, how do you teach your kids about consent? Do you think that will change after hearing conversations like this and take you beyond no means no? 212-433-9692. So in your article, Anne, I see that you cite some language from a blog called Yes Means Yes. For example, if you lean in to kiss somebody and they lean in to kiss you back, that's yes. Would that be yes under the California law or the SUNY policy without anything being verbalized?
Yeah, well, neither the proposed SUNY policy nor the California law require verbal consent. There was a policy at Antioch University in Ohio enacted in the early 90s that did require verbal consent at every step of the way, and it was the source of much mockery. But, you know, this is, I actually think, is pretty reasonable given how sexual interactions go down. You know, I mean, I think if you physically move towards someone, you are actively engaging in, you know, whatever that act is. You lean in to kiss someone back. You are, you know, obviously actively participating and wanting what's going on. You know, there's a lot of women who, when they talk about their assault, and I think that this is particularly the case in when alcohol is involved, but, you know, they'll say something like, and at that point, I just kind of shut down. Or at that point, I just kind of lay there. I mean, that's something that I've heard from probably a half dozen women. And I think that that's the sort of thing this law is designed to actively combat. You know, that I just shut down and lay there is not consent.
That's going to be tricky to enforce, though, right?
Well, listen, right now, everything about the sort of sexual encounter that may be consensual at the beginning, but then there's a particular act that isn't consensual and the woman wants to shut it down. You know, no means no is actually super difficult to enforce as well. I mean, this is all really, really tricky. When people sort of say this is a law that puts, you know, the university administrators in the bedroom, for example, you know, they're already in the bedroom. When they make judgments that, about, you know, you didn't say no strongly enough, that is them making a judgment on what happened in the bedroom as well. I think that this just sort of flips the onus and flips the priorities of what they're asking about and looking for. And probably importantly, you know, in my opinion, most importantly, changes how they talk to students about sex.
This is WNYC FM HD and AM New York, WNJT FM 88.1 Trenton, WNJY 89.3 Netcong, WNJP 88.5 Sussex, and WNJO 90.3 Toms River. It's New York and New Jersey Public Radio. Brian Lehrer with you as we talk about the new movement toward affirmative consent policies announced by Governor Cuomo for SUNY campuses in New York State, apparently being sent to Governor Jerry Brown's desk in California as a matter of state law there after passing the legislature, affirmative consent for sexual activity as a form of preventing sexual harassment. 212-433-WNYC. And Ashley in Manhattan, you're on WNYC. Hello.
Hi. I'll try not to take over the whole program because this topic is very important to me for a number of reasons, and I could talk about it all day long. But I just want to say that I echo what your guest is saying about this is healthy for women to have, not just in situations where you want to be clear about what the consent is, but also in general towards attitudes toward women's sexuality, because I think that it is really bad for society in general to teach that sex is wrong and it's bad and you have to say no and it's this very absolute thing, and then you're supposed to be able to save yourself from marriage, let's say, in general. And you know, the average age of marriages is higher now, so in theory, if you play this out, women are, you know, 26, 30 years old before they get married, and they're supposed to be virgins, and then they're supposed to just enjoy sex. I mean, none of it makes sense. It's all just like this talking around the actual subject, which is sexuality is okay, enjoying sex is okay, and healthy consent and positive consent is okay for women and for men, and it's clear and it's direct.
So do you think that this affirmative consent movement moves in the direction that you want to see?
Absolutely, I do.
Ashley, go ahead.
And I do, and I think it's terrific, and I think it makes a lot of sense, because the whole reason that the whole no means no thing even came to be is because women want to enjoy sex. They just don't want to be labeled as sluts or tramps or loose or all the other things that are used in negative ways. And so there's this whole like, well, do this, but I won't do this, and blah, blah, blah. And, you know, causing some guy to have blue balls is better than sorry, maybe I shouldn't have said that on the radio.
You said it.
But doing that is better than being labeled as a slut. And, I mean, it's just this mixed messages all the way around. It's terrible.
Ashley, thank you very much.
Okay, thank you. Bye-bye.
Natalie in Manhattan, you're on WNYC. Hello.
Let's keep the focus here. The focus is on sexual assault. Sexual assault is an extremely serious and dangerous thing. Now, when you bring in the whole idea of pleasure and women having pleasure and women enjoying sex, it totally trivializes and dilutes the issue. That is another issue, and women should have pleasure, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. But that has really nothing to do with the heart of the matter. And the heart of the matter is stopping this violence, this sexual assent, sexual assault, this entitlement that certain men feel about just, you know, destroying a woman's life by assaulting her sexually. That is the issue. And it shouldn't be clouded or diluted with all this sentimental stuff about women enjoying sex. I mean, that's a totally other issue. It belongs in, you know, another magazine.
Ann Friedman, what do you think?
Well, you know, I think that's actually a really important point. And, you know, Natalie's comment reminds me that most acts of campus sexual assault are perpetrated by repeat offenders. So, you know, she's right. There are young men who are on campus who sort of do this as a matter of course and who don't care about affirmative consent or no means no. What I think this law really does is that there are a smaller portion of cases wherein, let's say, a woman consents to one act, which is, you know, maybe making out on a sofa, but not, you know, some sort of penetrative sex later in the evening. And, you know, right now, that's the kind of thing that it's very easy for someone accused to sort of say, well, you know, she came back to my dorm room with me, like I had consent. And this law says, you know, to women especially, you know, just because you agree to make out with someone doesn't mean you agree to every sexual act on the menu. And so in those smaller percentage of cases that, you know, could potentially be portrayed as a miscommunication rather than, you know, willfully subverting what a woman wants sexually, I think this law does help. But yeah, but Natalie's point is correct that, like, you know, we're not talking about every sexual assault here. We're talking about a subsection of them.
Thank you, Natalie. Ann Friedman, my guest columnist for New York Magazine's The Cut. She wrote a piece related to the new affirmative consent movement called Oh Yes Means Yes, The Joy of Affirmative Consent. But to Natalie's point about these being criminal acts, I want to play another clip of Governor Cuomo from his announcement early this month on another aspect of the SUNY policy they're devising, the low number of cases reported by SUNY colleges to the police.
Fewer than 5% of the cases are reported. Why? Because the incentive for the school is to treat it as an internal matter. Why? Because the school doesn't want the exposure. The school doesn't want the publicity. It's not a positive in any situation. And I believe that the incentives actually can be a disservice to the victim because the incentive for the institution is at odds with what might be in the best interest for the victim. And again, I understand the tendency and I understand the motivation to handle it as an internal matter. But rape is a crime. This is not subject to a college campus determination or a college campus policy. It is a crime.
Governor Cuomo, early this month. Ann Friedman, what strikes me there is how similar it is to a big conversation we just had on the show yesterday about the Catholic Church pedophilia scandal, that the church in so many cases handled it as an internal matter. And it took that massive scandal to get them to treat it as a uniformly reportable crime. But you know what? That was 2002. And now we still haven't gotten to that single standard in society. And campuses, I guess, are the next battleground. Are you surprised that we're still asking whether sexual assault that's reported to a university should be reported to the police?
I'm not surprised at all, unfortunately. But, you know, I mean, the Governor Cuomo's point about the incentives is absolutely right. I mean, there's a reason. There are 85 schools right now that are under federal investigation for their handling of sexual assault cases. And, you know, it's pretty tough to see how a school would want to, you know, have prospective parents look at numbers of sexual assault and still want to send their children to this school. So I don't know. I think that it's important to keep in mind as well that law enforcement officials don't always do a great job at asking the right questions in rape cases either. But, you know, this is a situation where universities are just so far behind the norms for, you know, city law enforcement that this is a much needed update.
How could that be? Have you asked yourself why is that? Because in other ways, universities tend to be bastions of progressive thought in society.
I mean, I don't think that this is about progressive thought or not. I mean, every university in America would say absolutely, like, consensual sex is important. Absolutely, we condemn sexual assault. There's no way we would let, you know, like, known sexual offenders run free on our campuses. You know, that's something that they would all say. But, you know, I do think that the point about incentives is an important one. And what really happens when a campus's reported numbers of rapes go up, or when there's a prominent case in the news where a woman is like, I didn't feel safe on campus. You know, that's not something that they really relish getting out when they're constantly also trying to recruit new students and fundraise from alums and that sort of thing.
Catherine in Morris County, you're on WNYC. Hi, Catherine.
Hi. I'm really glad to hear that there's going to be possible education with especially young men about what real consent means. I recall a conversation I had with male coworkers. I worked in a situation where it was me and three men, young and, you know, more middle-aged, and we'd speak very casually, and they'd talk about, you know, oh, well, you know, I was with, you know, this girl or this woman, and she didn't want to do it at first, but, you know, I convinced her. And I said, well, did you convince her, or did she give in because she was afraid? And, or she didn't, you know, she didn't want to fight it. And I said, I've personally been in situations where, especially when drinking's involved, where you don't know what's going to happen if you really say no. And I've said no, and it's scary. And they were just completely deflated. Like, oh, God, you know, what was the truth there? And that's where men and women need to know what no really means. And when someone says, like, no, back off, it's not, oh, I can convince them.
When you said they were completely deflated, like, oh, God, what was the truth there? Do you mean you got to them? They had a moment of self-awareness because of their conversation with you?
Absolutely, yeah. And a lot of women or girls, they don't put it that way to a man. You know, basically, it was kind of rape. You know, when you did that, maybe not aggressive, violent, but it was something she did not want to do. And when I, you know, put it to them that way, they got it.
This is such an important call, I think, and put so well.
Thank you. I didn't know if I'd get it out right, but
yeah, I think you really did. And the fact that this story ends with the guys having this moment of self-awareness means that more self-awareness is possible, and this kind of communication effort might actually make a difference.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, nationwide, sex education in this country has been pretty deplorable and definitely not focused on caring about your partner's pleasure. You know, it's been much more, you know, here's the sort of things you need to do to keep yourself safe from sexually transmitted diseases. It's been, you know, here's how to say no if something is happening that you don't want. But, you know, there's not a lot of conversation about, like, maybe you should be attuned to both what you and your partner find sexy. And maybe, yeah, you should talk about it. You don't have to talk about it, but it would be good if you talked about it.
Yeah. And not without and without necessarily malicious intent, as she was describing these cases, but still where, in effect, it becomes rape at maybe a low level, but nonetheless something that the woman didn't want, and people are educable. You know, she also mentioned alcohol. She said, especially where alcohol is concerned. We haven't talked about that yet in this conversation, but alcohol plays a large role in this conversation and should play a large role in these policies, right?
It should. And you know, and this is something I feel personally pretty conflicted about. I mean, the California law says that if you are unable to give consent, if you are passed out, or if you are have had so much alcohol that you you know, wouldn't be able to, say, drive a car, you can't actually give consent to have sex, which is tough, you know, as an adult human, like most of us who's had sex drunk at some point. You know, I mean, I think that not all sex that happens with alcohol involved, you know, is rape. But I think that, you know, that's written into this law to sort of say, okay, well, even if you have been drinking, or perhaps especially if you have been drinking, you better be damn sure that your partner is consenting, and that it's not, you know, this is not a situation where you're going to be doing something the other person doesn't want. I think that the ideal with the California law is that past a certain number of drinks, like, you know, you just wouldn't have sex. And I agree with critics that it's not realistic to think that that students on college campuses are just not going to engage in sex when they're drunk. I just, you know, I really, this is where I sort of tend to think that the training involved, or talking to kids repeatedly about articulating their desires, will hopefully come into play and have some kind of effect. But
did you say there's something in the California law about a number of drinks?
There isn't anything about a number of drinks, but it sort of says if someone is too drunk to give consent, then you know, then it's considered rape. And it doesn't say, you know, there's no blood alcohol level or anything like that mentioned specifically. But you know, this is something that's sort of come up as you know, oh well, you know, lots of consenting adults have had sex under the influence of alcohol too. Is that's not all rape, is it? And I think that, you know, that's tough, given that the number of assault cases on campus that involve alcohol, it's designed to be a nod to that. But you know, I think it's tough. It would be very tough to legislate a number of drinks. I think that the standard of, is this person able to consent? Are they sort of with it enough to give consent? Is the standard.
This is a SUNY policy that Cuomo wants to get enacted for New York. I went to SUNY in Albany, and almost everyone drank at least a little. But from what I can tell, it seems like there's a lot more drinking in college today, unless it's all media hype. Do you have an impression or any data about whether problem drinking is increasing on campus?
I don't actually have data about problem drinking on campus, though I think that, you know, we can all pretty much agree that drinking to excess is part of a lot of people's college experience. And I think that, you know, this is one of those things. There's a lot of stuff that we say, you know, is reckless to do while drunk. Like, there are many things to say. And I think women have been taught for a long time it's reckless to engage in sex while you're drunk. Like, that is kind of like a dangerous thing for women to do. You're putting yourself in danger. It's tougher for you to say no. And this is one of those situations where it says to both parties, you know, being really drunk or engaging in sex with someone who is really drunk is reckless behavior on both sides. And I do think that's more important, right, in many ways than a number of drinks.
I don't know if it's relevant, but one thing that's different now from my college years is the drinking age has been raised from 18 to 21. Mm-hmm. And I wonder if that backfired in this respect. I know there are fewer alcohol-related traffic deaths in the age group, so Mothers Against Drunk Driving won that battle, thank goodness. But maybe alcohol is a hotter item on campus now because you can get busted for it. Maybe prohibition by age has resulted in more crime, if you're talking about campus sexual assault, just like prohibition resulted in more crime in society at large 100 years ago. I don't know, but it's a thought that I have.
Sure. I mean, and I should also mention that it's funny, someone created an app called Good to Go, wherein people... you know, you could sort of bring up this screen of options, and it says sort of, you know, are you drunk right now? Are you able to, are, you know, how drunk are you? Are you kind of drunk? Are you really drunk? You sort of check a box, and then it says, like, you know, do you consent to sex? And you check another box, which I think is wrong on lots of levels. I don't think that, like, you know, first of all, getting out an app is really realistic. And second of all, that, you know, you're going to be able to check a box before you, you know, engage in all kinds of, you know, different sex acts that one encounter might encapsulate. The app was pulled anyway. But I think it's interesting that sort of the first set of questions had to do with alcohol. It wasn't, you know, do you know this person? Do you, mm-hmm. are you sexually attracted, yeah, to this person? You know, it started with how drunk are you? So
as we talk about the new affirmative consent movement, Kristen on Long Island, you're on WNYC. Hello.
Hey, how are you?
Okay, what's up?
So, you know, I think that this whole movement to, you know, improve our sex education, especially in college, is really important. I'm in my senior year at Rutgers University right now. But I think that even more important to include in this discussion is, you know, the notion of masculinity that we're imposing on these young men. It, you know, it really pressures men to want to have sex with a lot of women. you know, most of the guys that I know in their early 20s are very much concerned with how many women they've had sex with and, you know, hardly even the quality of those relationships or encounters. And that's not something we teach to women. So obviously there's a disparity there. And it ends up resulting in these kind of men who are very aggressive and are very disappointed when no is being said to them because they expect something. And I think that that is in large part due to masculinity and the definitions of masculinity that we, you know, enforce on these men. And I think that's a big problem.
Yeah, both how we define status and that notion of privilege.
Mm-hmm, exactly.
Kristen, thank you very much. So Anne Friedman, who writes for The Cut of New York Magazine and had this piece related to the affirmative consent movement called Oh Yes Means Yes, The Joy of Affirmative Consent. Where do you think this goes from here? I don't know if you're following, you know, the legalistic details, the politics of it in New York State. I see that the legislature seems to want to get in on this and not just let Cuomo kind of decree it for SUNY campuses. Maybe the legislature also wants to take a broader step for the state at large, as I guess the California law is doing, not just for SUNY. But where does this go from here?
One thing I'm paying attention to is the education piece of it. And right now, there was an article in MSNBC this week about a Colgate University student seminar on Yes Means Yes. And there was a quote in it from a junior year man who was in a fraternity, so was sort of like, you know, in many ways the kind of man that we were hearing about, who said after the seminar, quote, "Now it's like you should be disappointed if all you got from your sex partner is consent," as in like he was like, "Oh, actually, I realized that, like, you know, having a partner who is happy with our sexual encounter is really important. It's not just like I need to protect myself from being accused of assault." And I think that is sort of how widespread change happens, because most men are not rapists. Like, you know, most people are just confused trying to have sex that is decent. And I think that this is a great step for that. And I'm actually watching that and how universities respond and roll out policies more so than I'm watching legislatures mandating it.
And just as we heard that story from that workplace, from Catherine and the young man who she was talking to and experienced that moment of self-awareness once they got their own experience on another level. All right, Anne Friedman, thanks a lot. Great conversation. Brian Lehrer on WNYC. Coming up next, 25 years in 25 days. Our anniversary series continues with 2003. Stay tuned.